Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Patrick, I can't wait to do today's episode.
That's great, Jim, but why are you talking in that British accent?
I get overexcited.
That's as bad as the vicious accent.
Patrick, I caught a little bit of a cold, I think.
Yeah.
I hope the listeners can bear with me here.
You're fighting through, Jim. I appreciate that. Carrying the ball for RTS across the goal line.
I'm playing hurt.
Yeah, that's right. That's what the pros do. We got to win ugly. That's you got to have that in your repertoire. I think every champion knows how to win ugly.
But I was fine when we did the interview.
That's right.
That we recorded. So
you were. Very
so
fine.
I did not infect any members of Guster.
This is not a Paul Trapp, Justin Bieber situation.
That's right, exactly.
I'm Justin Timberlake, I'm sorry. That would have been really weird.
Yes.
But he may have, by this time, met Justin Bieber too. Who knows?
He probably has.
Yeah. And speaking of Paul Trapp, he messaged us the other day that Guster is going to be playing in Omaha with a symphony orchestra or something. Remember that?
Yes.
So that's another weird thing about them, you know.
The world-famous Omaha Symphony Orchestra.
That's right.
And I think that's right around the time this episode will be up.
Yeah.
So, Paul, let us know how that goes. Yep. Call us, email
Call
us, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Do those things. All right. This show is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And you're going to hear part two of our interview with Ryan Miller of Guster.
Mm-hmm.
While we were doing the interview backstage at the 930 Club, he was wearing space pants.
Yes, he was.
Which I've seen in like videos. I've seen him wear those before. I think this is a favorite thing of his.
Yeah.
They're literally like, they're almost like, how would you describe it? They're almost like sweatpants
kind of thing, mm-hmm.
but with this like space pattern.
Yeah, the cosmos. Space. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Around his pants. They may be made of Tang. There's a pocket for his Tang.
And then also at the show I saw he was wearing a suit, pants and jacket, matching pants and jacket that was all like Pac-Man pattern on it.
Right.
But what I think is interesting about it, and I think you'll appreciate this, is he doesn't make like a big deal out of it.
No.
You know what I mean? He just comes out and that's what he's wearing. And I don't know. It sort of, you know, kind of adds again to the, like maybe the visual appeal of the band. But it's not like they, it's not like they have sort of a wacky persona. You
right.
know what I mean?
No,
they go out and they play the songs and they're really good musicians and they play it well. But, you know, he's wearing a suit that has Pac-Man
right
on it, right?
That's what he does.
That's right. All right. Let's get to this part of the interview. We're going to start off where he's going to talk about one of their more ambitious and interesting songs on the new album, which, by the way, we should mention the new album is called Look Alive.
Look Alive. Yeah, it just came out.
Check that out, people. Here's Ryan Miller.
I'm halfway home at the pub on the corner of the street. I see kids from school, but I stare down at my feet. Sports on TV. They scream for victory. A few blocks down, there's Dawn. She's got spinach on her teeth. In between the front ones, just a little bitty leaf. And I try to speak, but Dawn makes me nervous.
Tell me about the song Overexcited, specifically that you kind of affect a bit of a like British accent in your...
Kind of. Yeah. I would hope fully.
Okay.
I tried to really commit to it.
Okay.
Well, yeah, it's okay.
So how did that come about?
I think this was also just in the, like, we don't feel genreless necessarily, but there's definitely some hard times next to Overexcited feel like completely different songs. And, you know, Overexcited was just, we were writing something goofy at Joe's house and Luke was playing the vibe part and was like, dunk, dunk. And it kind of reminded us of like The Cure and a little bit of like Madness. And then I think initially he was like rapping over it. And I was like, it made us all laugh. And I was like, well, we're not going to rap. Like, I don't think we're ready to do that. Mostly because I just don't listen to enough hip hop to be able to like pull that off. And then I was like trying to make a regular melody over it. And then I was just like doing this speak fake English like swagger thing. Maybe I was high. And it just made us all, it just kind of locked in this weird way. It was like, well, that's funny, but we can't really do that. And we were all like, well, let's do it for now. Seems like we'll know. I mean, that's one good thing about making a record every 4 years is you get a lot of time to second guess yourself. So you get, you know, there's 50 moments between, you know, when we write the song and when we put it out that we can always decide to be like, this isn't working. And that's how it works with everything. Everything goes through all of our filters. There's not a note out of place. Like, we've discussed everything. So it was like, there's lots of places to check ourselves, if do a gut check, if it feels like it's not happening. But it was just sort of funny. And it was like, it was totally based on like our house madness, like the spirit of that thing. Or like, we covered Come On Eileen with Kishibashi like a few times once. And it was just like, these are great pop songs. And this kind of feels like a pop song. And it helped me get into this character a little bit more too. Cause it was like this guy who lives with his dad, his mom. And I don't know, the rest of my lyrics are generally very confessional and sincere, vaguely spiritual and existential. And this wasn't that really at all. Although there is something about this song is ultimately about something, but it felt, it helped me get into character. And then I was like, well, fuck it.
Just commit. Just commit to it.
Kind of. Yeah. And then it just turned out that like when we played it for people, like in the label or radio people, their ears perked up in a way because it was so outside. And I remember having this conversation. I went and played the record for our label. And I was thinking, and we're really good friends with the Bare Naked Ladies. They took us all around the country on their biggest tour ever. And we're still really good friends with them. And they taught us a lot about how to be a band, especially as adults and parents and, spending a lot of time. And I was like, you know, it's like kind of like a Chickadee China thing. Like, it's goofy, but that song's good. It's just like they kind of went for it. And so for us, for the band, it doesn't really ever have radio singles or whatever. It felt like a really weird choice, but also I just was like, it was the f*** it part of me. It was just like, f*** it. This is clear. And because it's still, it's a cool song. Like, it's a very musical song, and the, you know, there's cool little parts, and at the end, there's like cool horn section. Like, it's not a throwaway, composition necessarily.
It immediately stood out to me. I texted you about it. Yes. I was like, listen to that song.
It's kind of what you want, and we don't have a whole record of that either, so it felt like there was a slot for this, you know what I mean? And we didn't know where to put it in the record, like in the sequence,
right?
But we felt like it was like a different flavor, especially with like Not For Nothing, which is this like 7 minute air jam at the end, and then Hard Times, which feels like this Tears for Fears thing, you know. It's like cool, let's put this whole other thing in the middle of it, you know. I think that's what we liked about it, is it felt very outside but also felt like us.
Talking about that process, you know, when you guys were working it out and you said, you know, we'll just leave it for now. Do you guys have a sort of an impasse breaker within the band? Is it two-man majority rules, or does it have to be all four people in?
You know, it's extremely democratic. We do have a veto policy in general, like about touring and other things. I don't think it's been used ever. You know, it's very important for us to build consensus because we're going to be playing these songs for a long time, and you don't want to drag anybody through it. And we also just respect the hell out of everybody's opinions. And so, and sometimes it takes people a minute, you know, Look Alive, you know, Leo had done something really wacky with it, which is very close to what it is. He like took this thing and took it home and brought it back. And we didn't all agree at first. I mean, some of us were like super lit up, and some people were like, I don't know what this is. And then, I probably talk about it because it was Brian was just like, I don't know what's happening. And he was really bummed. I'm like, this is crazy. Like, we don't make music like this. Yeah. And then he was really bummed. And like, part of me was just like, shut the hell up. This is amazing. Right. But the more that he was able to articulate later, he was like, we just never found the backbeat. So like, we didn't even get till mixing when we really found like the rhythm of it. And all of a sudden he was fine. Cause it was like, this is why we respect each other. Cause it's like, you're wrong. But he couldn't figure out how to, he was right. He actually wasn't wrong, but he didn't know how to say what he was saying until he had to hear it. So there's an immense amount of respect for each other. And so, democracy rules. And a lot of times people will be like, I don't feel as strongly about this. And if people do, then usually everybody backs down. I mean, that has a lot to do with how, maybe to answer your first question with how does it, how are you still a band after 27 years?
Right. Totally.
It's a very grown up and democratic and respectful way to be, to be with one another.
Yeah.
Tell me about the relationship you have with the audience from the stage. So one thing I noticed last night, and I've been to many, many shows at 930 Club. I mean, some of these songs, some of the crowd reaction between songs was the loudest I've heard in this place. I mean, and I noticed, you know, just looking around, people seem to really know the lyrics. They're all singing along. And part of it's, I think, the visuals, you know, like, you know, especially with the upright drum you know, kit and stuff like that. And the fact that you guys play, you switch around instruments a lot and things like that. It's sort of visually interesting. But I think there's also just some energy that I think you send off to the crowd, almost as if like you're on the same level in some way. Does that make sense? So
yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of, there's a really good metaphor here where it's like, I don't want to explain this stuff away too much, or not away, but explain it. But I think that there's like, the word energy comes through a lot in these conversations, and it's like something I'm aware of, like, is a being a host of a music program and like what my superpower is outside of doing certain things. And there's a thing that I really have tried to focus on in my life, which is to be of the people, like the person that's giving me my chili or that's fixing our like toilet or whatever. And I'm not always great at it, but it's something that I'm aware of, that it's like, I can sometimes get to people if I want, you know, like, I can meet people and maybe they're, and I can I can be disarming in a way. And so this is something that like I'm aware of, that I had a lot of power and being in front of a microphone, that if I can somehow just make everybody feel cool, then it will be cool.
Yeah.
So right. I, you know, there's the word, I throw this word around a lot, but verisimilitude just mean just like telling the truth. So like if I make a mistake, usually I don't try and be like, oh, that didn't happen. I'll be like, oh, I just up, like, well, let's do this. And I think a lot of that, just owning your own stuff, is really part of this process, and not, and never try and condescend to people, and like it's very fourth wall, like that kind of stuff. I think it allows people to come in, and then I get, then this dialogue happens, so it's like then it becomes this thing, and it feels a little bit other, because I can appreciate the tack of the Beyoncés and the Tom Yorks of the world who just want to give this little piece and this little piece, but that's not really who I am as a person, we are as people, or what we are as a band. So that flow through, I think, is very something we try and cultivate, and I'm trying to be very aware of. So if I'm in a pissy mood, it's very evident from stage, even though it wouldn't be for other people. So I try and like, I don't know why. And I also just feel really supported by my bandmates to like, just let my freak flag fly. All of us do. But I do think it's been part of our success. Like when I read reviews of the band, like people use that word, like people feel comfortable, you know, which is an interesting word to throw around for a live music experience. Cause you don't usually go for comfort. Although I am a huge fan of music and I see bands all the time. And this is the kind of stuff that I love. Like, even when I saw like Ryan Adams last time, I mean, he didn't make me feel comfortable, but he was so funny.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh my God, you're just like, I could just listen to you like do your Ryan Adams into a microphone thing for 3 hours, you know? And I don't know if that's comfort, but I don't even know that he's like a likable guy, but he was entertaining as hell, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And I think that might just be whatever our version of that is.
Yeah. Well, and that what you're saying is what I wrote down here. I said there's no sense that you are above your fans. Is what I get from
and
the
I
show.
Really believe that. Yeah. Like, I think that the humility comes from being humbled for 27 years. Like, we aren't famous, and so we do feel lucky that we're able to do this and that we're able to sell out two nights at 930 Club in advance, you know, with a kind of weird synth record, you know, this far into our career. And I mean, I think we're a good band and that, but I also like, it's just a cool, I'm really, we just feel really lucky that
it's
we're
like
able
a
to
community.
Do it.
It feels like you've built a community somehow.
Yeah.
And
that
really
all, but
a great
that
thing.
All perpetuates, right? Yeah. So like we feel that from the audience. It's not a lot of navel gazing, like people looking, people are coming in with 20 years of listening to your band, or like, I've seen this band 15 times, or I, you know, grown ass women that'll be like, I started listening to you in like junior high, you know, that kind of stuff, all the history that people bring into it, it all perpetuates. I mean, that's why the energy stuff is really, it's really real. Cause it's, very palpable. And we feel it, and we try and give it back, and then it happens.
You mentioned spirituality, and in some ways, there's moments of your show where it almost feels like a revival kind of thing. You know, it does. You know, the way you guys are playing, and especially with, like I said, with the drums and all that, it just, there's this sense of like this, you know, movement that's sort of happening. It's uplift, that's lifting people up. It's really interesting.
I mean, that's like what it, I think that's just what live music is at its best.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw Radiohead at the Bell Center in Montreal like 8 months ago, and I was just like, I like Radiohead. Like, yeah. I think they're amazing. Obviously, I don't really put it on at home. It's not like, it's not stuff I just put on from like when I'm with my family. And I had seen them a few times, and it was pretty amazing. So I was expecting a good show, but like, I was ecstatic. It felt like church to me. And it was, right. It wasn't even songs that I loved. It was just like, just watching them playing this song that's in like 15, like the time signature is in 15 and everybody's just rapt and we're all just listening. And I was like, I was almost weeping. Like, I, as a fan, I understand what that can be like. So again, it's very humbling to feel like, oh, we're facilitating this on the other end. Yeah. But of course the spirituality part of it is factors in. I mean, I don't think about it when I'm up there, but I know as a fan of music that that's where I can go.
And the other thing, I think, given your history, when you guys came up in the 90s, that was when sort of like ironic music was, you know, a big thing, right?
right.
You know, but you guys seem very sincere.
Yeah, there's no irony. There's no winking. There's no like, no, there's nothing really ironic about our band. I mean, I guess that's true. I mean, I guess it was like Dave Matthews. I mean, I guess Radio was kind of ironic too. I never really thought about it that way, but yeah, I don't think we're like cynical dudes.
Right.
And so we just kind of like, we're going to strum our acoustic guitars and sing in harmony because we kind of don't know any better. And then when we do know better, we change it.
You know, we were talking a little bit about this, Jim, but they do kind of get lumped in to, you know, a little bit with sort of the jam band thing. And, you know, we didn't really talk to him about that, but I think that's part of it, is they have a community of a lot of people really into them and, you know, trading recordings of their shows and things like that.
So. Yeah. So apparently early on, they had a very liberal taping policy of the shows. They allowed anybody to just tape them and then trade those recordings, like you'd mentioned. I find the whole jam band thing kind of interesting because I sort of get it with maybe their sort of vibe, their kind of easygoing vibe and very fan friendly. And again, sort of the idea that they can all switch off instruments and play all this different stuff. And the bongo drums, that probably helps too. Yeah. Bongos and congas.
There you go.
But you see a show, they are not doing like extended solos and, you know, these long breaks and that kind of thing. Yeah. They're playing the songs. And one thing that Ryan mentioned when we talked with him is that when they record, they spend a lot of time and they go over every note, every beat, every aspect of a song till they feel like they have it just right. You get the sense of very much of a sort of Brian Wilson mentality in the studio. And I think that carries over to the live shows too, that they are very professional in putting on a really good sounding show. I think I even mentioned to you that of all the times I've been to the 930 Club, it was one of the best sounding shows I had ever been to. It just sonically,
right?
That sounded great.
That was, I think, the first thing you told me about it.
Yeah. I think it's because of the virtual sound check.
Yeah, that was so they actually played back a recording of the previous night's show to get levels that they wanted to adjust. I mean, 930 Club is a professionally run club, man. That's one of the best clubs you'll ever go to.
And
they really know how to take care of the artists and make it sound good and have a great experience there.
So that was cool stuff. So again, the new album from Guster is Look Alive. Go check that out. Mm-hmm. And then check our show out again tomorrow because we're going to talk with Ryan
one more time
some of his other projects, including a couple of TV shows that he hosts.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And I am definitely looking forward to this because there's a mention of Adam Coop in tomorrow's part of the interview. He shows up, the Coop.
All right. So listen.
Every day.
Every day.
Mm-hmm.
Rate and review on iTunes.
Every day.
Yes, do that every day. Call us.
Yeah.
612-440-1984. Email rock at suburbspod.com. Visit the website, suburbspod.com. Mm-hmm. Sam does such a great job keeping that up for us.
Go visit Sam.
You can also find us on social medias of Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those at suburbspod. Please let us know. I'm sure that we have some Guster fans in our community. I'd love to hear about your experiences with that band. So, to Rock in the Suburbs, I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
Every day.